Thank you all for that. That was absolutely lovely. Thank you so much for coming and singing for us. And I was so glad to see that everybody just chipped in, all the visitors and everyone. That's the way we like it around here, when everybody just chips in. So that was wonderful. Thank you. Thank you, Kevin, for leading that. And just want to reinforce a welcome again this morning to everybody that's here. All our visitors, everyone, those of you that are coming back home again, we're glad to have each one of you here this morning. It's extra special to have all of you here. So what's a good way to begin a conversation? Think about it a little bit. What's a good way to start a conversation with somebody? Well, a good way to start a conversation is to ask a question. That's what I just did. And I hope if I would have been talking to you face-to-face, that question would have elicited a response. Now, I don't expect when there's a group like this for people to be popping out answers. That usually is not what happens in a case like this. But you can think them in your head. So I'm just fresh home from an intense month of selling stuff. Every single weekend for the past month, I have been selling things. I've had gone to 3 trade shows and 1 fundraiser sale where I was a salesman at a bake stand. Now, I wasn't really supposed to be a salesman. I was just supposed to stand there and smile at people and collect their money. But in the end, I was selling them stuff. And I wanted to sell them stuff. I wanted to sell them all the stuff. And so that's what I've been doing. And after a while of that, when you are intensely surrounded by people and intense conversations all the time, maybe I'm unique in this, but I flat get peopled out. And this morning just looked pretty overwhelming to me. Just the thought of coming to church looked pretty big, much less having to get up front and talk again. But one thing that I've discovered with having to sell things to people, especially when you're in those sorts of situations where you don't know them and you have to initiate a conversation without being pushy, a great way to start a conversation is to ask a question. Believe it or not, people love to talk about themselves. And I'm sure y'all are unique in that and you don't. But everybody else does. And you get somebody started talking about themselves and it leads into a conversation that often leads to them giving you money. And so that's great in the sales world. Now, this is not a sales talk. And somebody who asks fake questions and feigns interest simply for the sake of getting money really doesn't deserve any of that. But questions in and of themselves are intriguing to me. And like I said, these past couple weekends, I've been asking lots of questions. And it's interesting to me the questions that make people stop mid-stride in a huge crowded expo center where they've got the one that I was at just this past week, they thought maybe around 20 to 30,000 people coming through there. What will make one person all of a sudden stop and talk to me? What are the questions that arrest them? And it made me think as I was talking to people and listening to other people talking, why do we ask the questions we ask? What questions are important to us? And does it matter what questions we ask? Are rhetorical questions of any value? And why am I asking you questions when you're not planning on answering me anyhow? But when used correctly, questions have tremendous power. And the title of my message this morning is Questions. So for an example, if I'd asked myself the question last week, do you have a printer? I could have answered no. It died at the farm fest when we were in the middle of trying to print out quotes for people. But if I'd asked myself that question and given myself that answer, I wouldn't be stuck with an iPad this morning. I'd actually have paper notes, which I much prefer, because while the chorus was singing, and I tried bringing up my notes, iPad thought that was a great time to initialize a reboot or whatever, a reinstall. And so I had an incredibly panicked moment there. The Lord answered some frantic prayers. But I'm kind of traditional in that sort of thing. I listen to a lot of audiobooks, but I like books on my bookshelves. And I like paper notes in my hand. I have not yet had a paper note reboot. But I'm here with this because I didn't ask myself the right questions leading up to this. So why do we ask questions? Well, one of the reasons we ask questions is to stimulate thought. And often these are kind of reinforcement questions. And we call those rhetorical questions. Questions to which we already know the answer. And we know the other person knows the answer, but we ask it anyway. Something like, is water wet? Well, yeah, we all know it is. But we ask those kinds of questions because it stimulates thought. It gets your brain moving. And it can open your mind to deeper questions and maybe better answers. And there's rhetorical questions that are often used in the Bible. You can turn, if you like, to Psalm 113. I'm just going to read verses 1 through 6 here. But there's a couple rhetorical questions in this passage. And I love looking at the way that the Bible asks questions and then answers them. Here in Psalm 113, verse 1, it says, praise ye the Lord. Praise, O ye servants of the Lord. Praise the name of the Lord. Blessed be the name of the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. From the rising of the sun unto the going down of the same, the Lord's name is to be praised. The Lord is high above all nations, and his glory above the heavens. I'm going to pause there a little bit because, you see, this is leading up. It's a build-up that's saying, this is who God is. And now it asks this question. Who is like unto the Lord our God who dwelleth on high, who humbleth himself to behold the things that are in heaven and in the earth? That's a rhetorical question. No one is like the Lord. So why is that question asked? It's asked because it's emphasizing the point that there is no one that can compare with God. And the Bible uses rhetorical questions like these many times, and when the Bible uses rhetorical questions like these, it uses it to drive home points that are indisputable. So when you see a rhetorical question in the Bible, pay attention to what it's asking, because it's driving home a point that it's undisputable. In Matthew 16:26, Jesus said, what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Again, it's a rhetorical question, but it's driving home the point of the worth of each individual soul. We ask questions to discover things. These are revealing questions. Doctors ask questions to find out what's wrong with a patient so they know how to help. I read a story, a book written by a doctor whose father was a very, very successful physician. He was one of the most successful physicians in his field. He was highly sought after to come and give lectures and to train people. And when asked what was the secret of his success, how was he able to help so many patients? You know what his answer was? He said, I always ask the extra question. You see, he said, when somebody comes to me with something that's wrong with them, they don't understand why it's wrong with them. My job is to get inside their head and see if I can figure out through what they're experiencing what's wrong with them and help them. He said, if I sit down with them in 15 minutes and ask 5 questions, I can't fully grasp what's happening. So I always ask the extra question, and often that leads to some extra information that can help me. Salesmen ask questions to know what a customer needs. Again, I said this is not a sales talk. But to meet needs, you have to know what the need is. If you don't know what someone needs, if I don't know what someone needs, it's usually my fault. Now, there are some people who are incredibly reticent. They don't like to talk. They don't like to disclose any personal information. But again, by and large, most people like to talk about themselves. And if I'm trying to help someone, if I come away from that conversation not knowing at all what to do to help, it's probably because I did a lot of the talking. I wasn't listening to what they needed. Maybe I wasn't asking the right questions. Many times, my view of what someone needs is more of a projection on them of what I would like to give them. Maybe it's me saying, this is what I'm comfortable giving, so that's what I'm going to hear from you, because that's what I'm okay with giving to you. So once our conversation goes past that point, I kind of shut down. I don't ask those extra questions. And that's a selfish approach. Years ago, when I was just getting into selling things, I remember a phone conversation where a lady asked me a question, and I began explaining to her in great detail whatever it was that she had asked about. And as I was rolling on, I was thinking, yeah, I'm doing a pretty good job here. I'm explaining this thing, which I know what she needs. And guess what she all of a sudden said in the middle? She said, will you be quiet so I can talk? And that was a good lesson to me. Because in the end, she wasn't wanting to hear my explanation. She was wanting me to hear what she needed and process that. And I totally learned that lesson. I wish. But there's many instances of this type of question in the Bible as well. In Matthew 15, verses 32 through 37, Jesus called his disciples and said, I have compassion on the multitude because they continue with me now 3 days and have nothing to eat. And I will not send them away fasting, lest they faint in the way. And his disciples say unto him, whence have we so much bread in the wilderness as to fill so great a multitude? They were asking a revealing question. What can we do? This is the situation. What can we do about it? And then Jesus asked them a question in response. He said unto them, how many loaves have ye? It was a revealing question. And they said, 7, and a few little fishes. And he commanded the multitude to sit down on the ground. And he took the 7 loaves and the fishes, and he gave thanks and brake them and gave to his disciples and the disciples to the multitude. And they did all eat and were filled. And they took up of the broken meat that was left 7 baskets full. A few revealing questions that then led to a great miracle. We ask questions to uncover things. And these are probing questions. Parents ask their children after church, why were you giggling up front? Why were you whispering? I was pretty sure when I was sitting on the front bench that my parents never watched the preacher. Because if I would ever whisper or poke or anything, they would catch it. Even if I just did it one time. And so I was pretty sure that they just specifically sat where they could only see me and they didn't watch the preacher. Of course, it didn't help that my dad was the preacher and so he could see me easily. But those are probing questions that we ask to get deeper inside of a situation. Jesus used probing questions to dig deeper into the understanding of the ones he taught. You can turn with this to this with me if you like to Matthew chapter 16. I'm going to read verses 5 through 12. And this is after the passage we just read where the miracle happened, where Jesus asked some questions and performed a miracle. Now he's digging deeper into their understanding. Matthew chapter 16, verse 5. And when his disciples were come to the other side, they had forgotten to take bread. Then Jesus said unto them, take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of the Sadducees. And they reasoned among themselves, saying, it's because we've taken no bread. Which when Jesus perceived, he said unto them, O ye of little faith, why reason ye among yourselves because ye have brought no bread? Do ye not understand? Neither remember the 5 loaves of the 5,000 and how many baskets ye took up? Neither the 7 loaves of the 4,000 and how many baskets ye took up? How is it that ye do not understand that I spake it not to you concerning bread, that ye should beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of the Sadducees? So he asks some probing questions, and then it says in verse 12, then understood they how he bade them not beware of the leaven of bread, but of the doctrine of the Pharisees and of the Sadducees. Probing questions help us dig deeper and they help us uncover truths that we don't uncover without asking those probing questions. We ask questions to learn. These are the questions of exploration and discovery. Questions like, how do we find out what lies beyond the mountains, what lies over the oceans? And it's this type of question that's driven much of human progress. It's the innate curiosity of a child who wants to figure out what happens if they climb up a stairs, or if they stand at the top of the stairs and jump, or if they open drawers and pull everything out, or if they crawl behind a couch, or reading books. It's about learning things we don't know. And then we also ask questions to give an answer. And these are illuminating questions. Jesus asked questions to reveal himself to his disciples and to others. In Mark chapter 2, I'm going to read this account. The man with palsy. Jesus asked some questions here to reveal who he was. Mark chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. And again he entered into Capernaum after some days, and it was noised that he was in the house. And straightway many were gathered together, insomuch that there was no room to receive them, no, not so much as about the door. And he preached the word unto them. And they come unto him, bringing one sick of the palsy, which was born of four. And they could not come nigh unto him for the press. They uncovered the roof where he was. And when they had broken it up, they let down the bed wherein the sick of the palsy lay. And I'm going to pause there a little bit, just because it's interesting to me, the thought processes of these men. They show up. The normal way you go into a house is blocked. It's too many people. So they start asking themselves questions. What's a good way? How important is it that we get this man into Jesus? Well, it's very important. So how do we do it? Apparently there wasn't a window that they could shovel him through. And it was important enough to them that they thought it was worth that physical effort of climbing up to the roof, taking the roof apart, and then lowering him down through. So they asked themselves some very specific questions to give themselves an answer of what would bring them closer to Jesus. Now in verse 5, when Jesus saw their faith, he said unto the sick of the palsy, Son, thy sins be forgiven thee. But there were certain of the scribes sitting there and reasoning in their hearts, Why did this man thus speak blasphemies? Who can forgive sins but God only? Here you see some rhetorical questions. They're trying to drive home the point that Jesus isn't who he says he is. Verse 8, immediately when Jesus perceived in his spirit that they so reasoned within themselves, he said unto them, Why reason ye these things in your hearts? He was asking a revealing question. Whether it's easier to say to the sick of the palsy, Thy sins be forgiven thee, or to say, Arise, take up thy bed and walk. And here was a question that was going to be given an answer, because Jesus was saying, If I am able to perform this miraculous healing, I am able to forgive sins. And he says in verse 10, But that ye may know that the Son of Man hath power on earth to forgive sins, he saith to the sick of the palsy, I say unto thee, Arise and take up thy bed and go thy way into thine house. And immediately he arose, took up the bed, went forth before them all, insomuch that they were all amazed and glorified God, saying, We never saw it in this fashion. Jesus' questions here, Jesus' response, the way he asked these questions, revealed the truth about his divinity. He used questions to give an answer. God asked questions of Adam and Eve after the fall to show them the extent of what they had done. One of the first questions that it's recorded in the Bible that God asked was of Adam. He said, Where are you? Adam was hiding after he had sinned. And he said, What did you do? And Adam told him about eating the fruit of the tree. Now God knew what Adam had done. God knew where Adam was. Why did he ask him those questions? It was so that Adam would understand what he had done. Those were illuminating questions. Those were questions that were asked so that Adam would understand the extent of what he had done. Teachers ask questions. And they ask questions that help a student think through a problem differently. Maybe think through a problem till they see the solution, or sometimes it's just seeing the path to a solution. I remember many times when I was in school going up to my teacher's desk with a question. Get there and flop my math book down. Oh, I don't know how to do this. And the teacher would look at it and ask a simple question. Oh, okay, yeah, I do know how to do it. What was my teacher doing? Was asking a question in a slightly different way than what it was put in the book to make me think about it a little bit differently and see my way forward to a solution. And maybe that's sometimes what we face in life, where we're against something that our regular questions aren't working. We're not getting an answer that we're wanting. Well, maybe we're asking the wrong questions. Maybe we need to ask a different question so that God can reveal better what his plan is for us, or what he has for us, or what his answer is for us. In the parable of the Good Samaritan, Jesus asked at the end of the parable, who was the neighbor? Why did he ask that question? It was pretty obvious, wasn't it? It was to reveal a deeper truth about people. And it's the same way when we evaluate our own lives. We need to ask ourselves those illuminating questions to know who we are. Because many times we tell ourselves a story about ourselves that we want to be true. I am this kind of person because I want to be that kind of person. I want to be the kind of person who is A, B, C, D, E, and F. And so that's the kind of person I am. We need to ask ourselves illuminating questions. Am I doing what a person with these characteristics does? Am I acting the way that person does? Am I responding the way that person does? And that reveals who we truly are. And we're not unique in that struggle of not having our picture of ourselves and the reality of ourselves being askew. The Bible talks about it in a very familiar verse of Jeremiah 17, verse 9, where it says, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? So I have to look into my own motives, and I have to ask some of those hard questions of myself. So those are some of the reasons why we ask questions. Now, how do we ask questions? And I feel like it's important how we ask questions, because part of how I'm going to receive an answer will depend on how I ask the question. We can ask questions with genuine curiosity. And there's a quote that I like. It says, be curious, not judgmental. And that kind of comes back to the thing of asking the extra question. Sometimes we look at a situation and we make a decision about it. That's what's going on here. That's what they think. That's how this person acts. This is why. I just know it. But if you actually start digging into it, often we're not right. But we're lazy kind of inherently, and we don't like to ask those extra questions. So let's be curious. And by curious, I don't mean being gossipy, where, hey, what's everybody doing now? But I mean a genuine interest in each other and in the world around us. Look into the things that you have questions about. Genuine curiosity leads to genuine answers. And I see this in the life of Jesus. This is what brought those crowds and crowds of people to listen to Jesus. They had a genuine curiosity. This teacher was teaching different things. He was saying it differently. It was a new perspective. Why? What's he going to say next? Is that going to make a difference for me? They had genuine curiosity, and their lives were genuinely changed. But there's also dangerous curiosity. And that's the one where we ask questions like, I wonder what would happen if. And these are the questions that lead to young men breaking bones. At least it did me. And I know it did family members of mine. And these are also the questions that can lead to ruining our minds if they're not tempered. Where there's an idle curiosity. and we don't look in the right places for answers. And that's what happened to Lot. If you look at the story of Lot, he had a dangerous curiosity, sort of a blind curiosity that led him to being pulled into Sodom and his family being just ruined by those choices because he seemed to just kind of wonder, you know, what's going to happen? What's the matter with it? Is there anything wrong with that? I wonder what would happen if we just went over there to Sodom. And we see the effect that it had and the downfall of his family. We ask questions. Another way to ask a question is in a desire to learn more. We have the noble Bereans in Acts chapter 17, where it says that they searched the scriptures daily to see if these things were so. Paul was teaching, and he was teaching the scriptures he was giving them were from the Old Testament. And he was saying, you see these prophecies? These are leading up to Jesus. And so now they were digging back into those prophecies and saying, is that right? Is that really the way it is? And that was out of a desire to learn more and to search for good answers. There's also, we can ask questions in an antagonistic manner. And that's a dangerous way to ask questions. That's what the lawyers and the scribes and Pharisees did to Jesus. They wanted to trap him. They weren't asking questions because they had a genuine curiosity like the people were. They weren't asking questions because they had a desire to learn more. They were asking questions because they wanted to trap him. They wanted to get him in something that he could not get out of. We have one lawyer doing that. There's multiple instances of this. But in Matthew chapter 22, verse 35 and 36, one of the lawyers, it says, then one of them, which was a lawyer, asked him a question tempting him and saying, Master, which is the great commandment in the law? What a great question. Well, that would be a great question if it came from a heart that was actually desiring to learn more, but it did not. So how we ask questions is important. You can ask a good question in a wrong way and get a bad answer. And lawyers still use this technique all the time in their cross-interrogation and so forth. They phrase a question in a specific way because they want a specific answer. They're not trying to shed light on the situation. They're trying to trap somebody. And maybe sometimes we do the same thing. The questions that we ask, we're asking in an antagonistic manner, in a way that we're hoping can maybe trap somebody rather than actually give illumination on the situation. And we do this sometimes, I think, with ourselves, at least I do, when I want to get out of something that I don't want to do. I ask a convoluted question that points to an answer that I already want. I've decided that that's what I want. I ask questions like, well, is it my money? Can't I do with it whatever I want? It's mine, isn't it? And that points me to an answer that I like, that, yeah, it's my money. I can do with it whatever I want. I don't have to be responsible with it. I don't have to give it to God. It's mine. And there's one of my favorite questions in this category is, are you trying to manipulate me? Because if one were, they certainly wouldn't tell you. And if they aren't, that's a question that reveals more about you than it does about them. So what are our questions then? Those of you on the front benches here, how many ounces are in a cup? It's not a trick question, I promise. I know sometimes preachers try to ask trick questions, and so that's why it's scary to answer. This is not a trick question. How many ounces are in a cup? Eight. Very good. Thank you. So anyone, the rest of you here, what time is it? There's some people that are keeping super good track of it. It's not a trick question. Okay, thank you. All right, so hang on to those answers. So some questions maybe we shouldn't really have to ask, or at least it's not worth the effort to go into an in-depth research. It's a sad remark on our society that the fifth most Googled question in 2022 was, how many ounces are in a cup? And the sixth most Googled question in 2022 was, what time is it? And the thing I find super intriguing about that is that most of those Google searches were done from a phone, which is supposed to have time right on it. So those questions and what our questions are reveal what kind of a person we are. We see questions that Cain asked. Now, Cain was an escapist. He had a victim mentality. He asked questions like, well, am I my brother's keeper? After he had killed him. But we see Paul and Silas in prison, the prison keeper. He was a seeker. He was a man willing to be changed. And he asked questions like, what must I do to be saved? What should I do to be changed? We can ask questions that evaluate a situation. And children learn to do that at a young age. Is this thing hot? Does that mean I should touch it? My little girl isn't here today, so I can say this story. She has a propensity of living life sometimes kind of on a knife edge. She knows where the hurt happens and where it doesn't, and she kind of likes to walk that narrow middle road. And it came to bite her last night. She burnt her wrist on an iron just a little bit. But she knew better than being close to it, but just had to walk that line. And she asked herself the question of, is the iron hot? The answer was yes. She asked herself the question, should I step back? The answer was no. And she found some consequences for that. And that's maybe sometimes the questions we ask ourselves that reveal more about ourselves. When given an answer, how do we respond to that answer? Questions should be relevant to the situation at hand. If I would go to the doctor and I have a metal shaving in my eye, and I've had to do that before, I would be very unimpressed if he spent the focus of that time asking me about a scar on my arm. I want him to take care of what's happening in my eye. So questions need to be relevant. But I think sometimes I do this to God. God's trying to teach me to find a purpose in serving him. Maybe that's something that you struggle with, where God is trying to give you a purpose, trying to teach you a purpose in simply serving him. But I ask him, well, why haven't you given me a girlfriend yet? So you see the point? It's important to make our questions relevant. And we learn to ask questions that can lead us to answers, or at least the path to an answer. And that's the last thing I'd like to talk about, is finding answers. Questions that are asked only for the sake of asking questions have limited value. It's easy to fall into the trap of thinking that since questions are important, questions are the important part. And forget that questions are intended to lead us somewhere, to lead us to answers. And in finding answers, it's important that we ask questions of sources that can give us answers. And it's interesting to me that in the creation account, in the first story of the Bible, we have God giving commands. God's giving answers. He's saying, this is going to happen. I want this to happen. You do this, Adam. You know, he's giving out direct statements. He's giving instructions. The first question that we have, the first words out of the devil's mouth, those are the first question. And he said, are you sure that God said that? So we have from God statements, we have from the devil a question that leads to doubt. So if we want answers, let's look in the right place. If you're looking for financial advice, don't talk to me. Talk to somebody who's good with finances. If you're looking for answers in algebra, don't talk to me. Talk to Mr. Nathan. So let's look at the right places to find answers to our questions. If we're looking for questions to life, let's talk to people who are being strong in life. Let's look to the Word of God for answers. But there is a difference between looking for answers and demanding answers. Paul was a man who was looking for answers when he was still Saul. On the road to Damascus, he found answers that changed his life, and he listened to them because he was actually looking for answers. Joseph was a man that was looking for answers. He was betrayed multiple times, but he patiently waited for an answer. Naaman at first demanded an answer, and when the answer wasn't what he wanted, he was going to leave. He would have died a leper, but he was convinced to back up, look for an answer, and when he did, he found healing. Pilate demanded an answer to the question, "What is truth?" Then threw up his hands and walked away and totally missed the answer that was standing right in front of him. Jesus, the way, the truth, and the life. In the Old Testament, Saul demanded an answer. He was so determined to get an answer, he ended up going to a witch, totally leaving all decency and godliness behind. And then he died in shame, disgrace, and suicide. Meanwhile, David was looking for answers. When he was pursued through the wilderness by a vengeful king, he focused on God and gave us the beautiful declarations of trust, praise, and confidence that we find in the Psalms. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. When we face difficult questions, many times there are complex answers. Answers are not always simple. Not all questions have good answers. Not all questions have easy answers. And not all questions even have comprehensible answers. Paul looked for answers to something that was troubling him, and he called it a thorn in 2 Corinthians 12. I'm going to read a couple verses there. 2 Corinthians 12, verses 7 through 10. "Unless I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan, to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. For this thing I besought the Lord thrice, that it might depart from me. And he said unto me, My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then am I strong." So the answer was there, but it was one that required Paul to change his understanding of the answer. And some answers change over time. God's plan, as it's lived out in my life today, will look different from what it looks in 5 to 10 years. I believe that God's plan for our lives is always the same, that we bring glory to him. But what that looks like in a practical way can change. So right now, it might be as a teacher. It might be as an employee, as an employer, as a parent or a grandparent or whatever it is. In 10 years, it could be something different. So some of those times, answers change. And our understanding and our ability to process answers matures over time. But answers can become apparent where before there was only darkness. There are some answers that we may never grasp in this life. Our little mortal minds can never fully comprehend God. We cannot comprehend all that he is, all that he does. But we can be okay with that. However, there are answers. Life is not only questions. God designed questions to have answers. He spoke the world into existence. He knows all things. He gives assurance, reassurance, and meaning to life. His word stands forever. As it says in Matthew 24, verse 35, "Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away." There's answers there for us. So are you looking for an answer? Are you struggling with meaning, feeling uncertain? Evaluate your questions. See where they're coming from. Is it from a heart that's looking for answers, or from a heart that's looking for confirmation to something that I already decided? What are my questions? Why am I asking them? How am I asking them? Am I looking for answers? God has answers. He always has answers. He really does. So listen for those answers. Let God speak to you. And I pray that God gives each of us peace as we look for the answers that he has for us. Let's stand for prayer. Our Father in heaven, we come to you this morning thanking you, Lord, so much for each one of these wonderful people that are here today. And Lord, you know the situation that's in each of these lives. And I pray that you would work in these lives and in each one of us. Help us to ask the right questions and to look for answers from you. And the things that are hard that we don't understand, that you would give us a sense of peace and direction. I pray that you would be with those who are not able to be here this morning, that you would watch over and keep each one as well. And go with us as we go from here. Help us to be lights for you wherever we go. I pray in the name of Jesus. Amen.